You thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Team.
Oh, we're back from another week.
Another week, another show. We back. What's going on, man?
It's not really another week. It's the week of the furlough.
It is, so it's another week. So you get a vacation.
I said, without pay, the worst week in the world for me. If you all didn't know, I'm a government employee. Right now, I'm off because Congress wants to be a-holes.
And let us know how you really feel about
Congress
it.
Congress wants to be a-holes and shut us down, and now we can't work. I always say people, they don't care about the people, man. They're the selfish individuals. All they care about is themselves, you know, because they're getting paid and we're not. So that's kind of hilarious to me.
Yeah, I've always stated that politicians don't do what's best for the people. They do what's best to get reelected and for themselves. But
yeah, so now I'm trying to look into other jobs while I'm off. So I want
you just putting it out like that.
Yeah, I'm trying to find another job. I want another job. I want to work. I want to be a bouncer. Like years ago, like my man Bryce, who used to be a bouncer. Well, he's still a bouncer, but he used to be a bouncer at the club we used to go to, Zanzibar, and he tried to get me to be a bouncer back then. I was a lot bigger though back then, but I still think I can pull it off.
You might can pull it off.
I think I can pull it off. I mean, you see some of the bouncers out here now?
I do. Very small guys.
Lightweight.
Very small.
Or, you know, I heard some chicks used to tell me I had a big butt, so I might twerk it at a female joint.
Hey, man, do what you got to do to get that cash, man.
Gotta make that cash. Gotta make that money.
Cash is king.
You know what I'm saying? But anyway, it's the Urban Sports Team on the Eyes Radio Network. That's temporary. We may not even be on the Eyes Radio Network, longer.
Why?
They're like, they don't have that many shows on there. Everybody left. And also, Tom isn't really updating yet as much. Life is busy. He had a kid. Congratulations, too, dog.
Congratulations. I didn't know he had a kid, but you already know my feelings on that. So I'm not going to put that on air. Not going to put it on air.
It's okay. It's okay. But yeah, man. So we may just flat out be the Urban Sports thing. But no, it's cool. It's a good run. We did a live show. We're very appreciative. I'm very appreciative. We did a live show from our own studio and also from a bar. So I'm not even mad at it. So it is what it is. But yeah, it's the Urban Sports Team right now, temporarily on the Eyes Radio Network. We have I can't say such shows because I don't believe there's any shows on there, but we're the only show that represents.
We're holding it down.
We hold it down.
Franchise players.
We are franchise players.
We are the franchise.
Real talk. True story. Seven strangers in one household. Real world type stuff. But we have such shows. I'm going to support. I'm going to support some shows that are not on the Eyes Radio Network.
I always wanted to ask you this before you go into your little spiel. Do you think they give us credit like we give them credit on their shows?
Who?
The people you give free promotion to.
Yeah, Voice of the Fan does it all the time.
Okay.
That's all right. My homies. All for real.
Well,
matter of fact, it's a big announcement they want. It's a big announcement they have. They keep telling me it's a big announcement. They're going to look out for all of us. So.
I can appreciate it.
Yeah, they're saying people that put when they got on, was it ESPN 570? They told me to be on the show and give them a call.
Hey, folks, man. That's what's up, man.
They're cool people, man. And, you know, like I said, Clutch Sports Radio tried to hook us up with Liddell Betts. So
I can appreciate that.
So, I mean, I got to shout out people trying to look out. You know what I mean? I wouldn't do it if I thought they were phony.
Okay.
Go on to your spiel. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Clutch Sports Radio, which is produced by my boy Darwin. Check out the site. It's www.darwin-sports.com. Voice of the Fan, which is www.blogtalkradio.com/thevoiceofthefan. What's up, Adonis Jones, Watts, and my man, damn, I'm having a moment right now. Why am I having great man Jeff? Damn, my day is off.
Is he really your man if you don't know his name?
No, it's Jeff. It's all three of them. I keep forgetting like all three of them.
Okay.
And it's like it's a trio.
I'm gonna need you to tighten that up if it's your
I
man.
I do. Though. All right, hold on. Let me start over because, you know, I'm kind of stressed out. Because of the furlough and whatnot. Hold on. My man Adonis Jones, my man Alex, who's what I'm talking about, Watt, and my man Jeff. All right?
That's better.
All right. I got to get my stuff together. Like I said, I'm stressed out a little bit. And we also have our show syndicated on the internet radio station, Real People, Real Talk. The site is managed by our good friends from Applegee, so make sure you visit the site. It's www.realpeoplerealtalk.com.
All right, let's get into our tradition, the pregame.
Oh, before we get into that, that's true. I messed that up. Before we get into the pregame.
See, yeah, you threw me off because that little silence, that's kind of the transition
for
me.
Yeah, that's my fault. Probably on Monday, the Urban Sports Team will be representing ourselves on the ESPN 1580 ESPN.com/radio. Well, basically the radio on ESPN Radio 1580. It will be the Coach Les and RJP3 show. So we'll be representing. It's an affiliate in Denver, ESPN Radio affiliate in Denver. So we'll be representing. So you'll hear the Urban Sports Scene on there talking about the Washington Redskins, the state of the skins. So we'll see what goes on Monday. I'll fill you all in on Twitter or our Facebook page to talk about what time we'll be on there. So make sure you tune in.
You'll be on there.
Dog, we're a team. I say we because we're a team.
I appreciate that, but
jeez,
you'll be on there.
I will be on there, but yeah. We're a team. The Urban Sports Scene.
Just say you'll be representing the Urban Sports Scene.
Nah, man, we're a team.
I think that'll be more earnest to the people.
Oh my God. Okay, I will be on there representing the Urban Sports Scene.
Thank you, I appreciate
it. Dude, difficult.
I'm not difficult. I just try to be actual and factual.
All
right, that's
man, all. It's all good. Go ahead. Now say it.
Let's get into our tradition, the pregame.
All right, so first thing, what's the first thing? First things first, Nationals, season's over. Davey Johnson will probably not be back as a Nationals manager. Any suggestions of who you would like to see as the next manager for the Washington Nationals?
As a fan of the Nats, first of all, I think it's upsetting that Davey Johnson won't be back. They didn't offer him a 2-year contract. That's first and foremost. Second, over the last couple of weeks, you know, Jason Worth has come out and said that he would like Cal Ripken Jr. to be the manager of the Nats, which I think would be, you know, depending on how he's wired and if he has a genuine interest in being a bench coach, could be interesting for the Nats.
A bench coach or a manager?
Oh, excuse me, the manager.
Okay.
Be the manager for the Nats. It could be interesting. We do know that players, you know, former players who don't have a lot of managerial experience have come in and been successful as managers. And there's also, you know, and I guess one of the things that's been a season-long debate is Matt Williams of the Diamondbacks, former major league player, is one of the leading candidates for the Nets manager job. Me personally, I wouldn't be mad at either one of them. I do have full confidence that Mike Rizzo will pick the best manager for this team, though.
You got confidence in Mike. Why do you have confidence in Mike Rizzo?
For how he's built the team. Look what he's done. You know, even though, you know, they were terrible and they lucked up into the number one pick 2 years in a row with Bryce Harper and Steven Strasburg, but also the trade for Wilson Ramos, bringing in Gio, and, you know, signing Jason Worth, which at first didn't look like it would be, didn't look like he would live up to fulfill his end of the contract. But as we saw this end of the season, if Jason Worth can continue to stay healthy, he is a live bat within the middle of the lineup, a guy who can get on base and drive in runs. So I do feel confident in Mike Rizzo and the way he stockpiled the farm system. So I feel confident that he'll pick the right manager for this team.
Hopefully, you know, the Nats have a very intriguing job. I mean, the Nats seem very intriguing to any manager, all the talent they have within that organization, and they're ready to win now, and they're young. They're young guys who are ready to win now. I've heard a lot about Randy Knorr, who is on the staff now. A lot of the players like him and would like him to be manager. We'll mention Matt Williams, who I think is probably the front runner on Rizzo's list of people he wants to bring in. Heard of Cal Ripken. I think the spit to the face of the Baltimore Orioles, if Cal Ripken ever decides to do that. I drank milk as a kid, 2%. Cal Ripken, she supported 2% Baltimore Oriole. I can't have that man become a manager for the Washington Nationals. That would hurt my feelings. So, Cal, do not take the job. I know Cal is serious, though. Cal does want to be a manager. He does want to be a manager. He's serious about it. He's more serious about being an owner. He wants to be an owner. But I think he's very intrigued about being a manager. Don't get me wrong. I would love to see Cal manage a team. I just don't want to be the Washington Nationals, knowing it's so close to the to Baltimore. So, Cal Ripken, please do not take the job as a Washington National. And I really don't think he'll be given that job anyway.
And I'm sure he was listening to you. Sure he was. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
He
puts a lot of weight in your words and your opinion.
Everybody should. I speak. When I speak, people need to listen. You know what I mean? I'm talking about Cal Ripken Jr. I'm talking about a guy I looked up to. If you have a Twitter account, I will tweet you this, so you will listen to what I'm saying. Do not manage the Washington Nationals. Period. But guy, I think they should try to lure away from a particular team, or I know he's a free agent, is Joe Girardi. Why not go with a coach that's been a manager who's won a championship with a team that is ready to win now?
Joe Girardi is not leaving New York.
Why not? I mean, the Yankees don't have a boatload of talent. Robinson Cano is asking for $305 million, which is out of this world. Did we talk about that last week?
No, we didn't.
Let's mention that. What's up with this dude trying to get $305 million? Is Jay-Z giving him crack or something?
No, I think that's kind of the going rate for him, because what he means to the future of the Yankees franchise. Clearly, one, the Yankees can afford it, for one.
Yeah, but they're not going to make that same mistake. They did the same thing with A-Rod, and basically that's what A-Rod's money added up to. He's pretty much going off A-Rod's contract.
Yeah, but extension, with inflation put in there, you got to constitute for inflation.
The man is smoking dippers. Dippers in this area means, and when I mean this area, I mean Washington, D.C., Maryland, Virginia area. And what I mean, it's weed and bombing fluid, right?
Yes, so, PCP.
PCP, there you go. More universal term, PCP.
Yeah, PCP. If you can get it, why not ask for it? I wouldn't be mad. Is he worth $305 million? No. Just because of, he's on, what is he, 31?
Yeah, about 31.
Yeah, about 31. So you'll be paying a guy who's on a.
He probably has about a good 4 years left, if that.
Yeah, so I think something more like 5 years, $125 million is probably more. I think that's what he's worth.
That's feasible.
That's more feasible.
For the Yankees, it's feasible.
For the Yankees and for the going, probably what he's actually worth at this point of his career, because he's on the wrong side of 30. But, we never know.
Let me just say this real quick before we go to another topic. Baseball owners, again, you're not listening to me. I don't really care. Don't ever pay a guy in his 30s that amount of money, like A-Rod, Pujols, Robinson Cano. It's dumb. You pay the players.
Josh Hamilton
included. Yeah, I like Josh Hamilton. I feel like, real quick on Josh Hamilton, y'all folks are too hard on Josh Hamilton. That man has gone through stuff that you will never go through. And for you all to keep nitpicking on what his life and stuff is about, and then getting on him about his play and trying to put that together, leave that dude alone. He's going through things and demons that he's trying to beat. So leave that man alone. But within like Robinson Cano, those players, I mean, at the age of 30, they should never get that amount of money. But the players like Manny Machado, Bryce Harper, Mike Trout, who are in the fresh part of 20, they should be getting that money, because you can get that big buck for that bang. So
you get the production out of the contract.
Exactly, you'll get it all. You know what I mean? They won't hit that point in the season. We'll just be like that point in their career when you're like, dang, they're not worth this money. They should be worth that and some. So keep that in mind. Anything you want to add to this?
Absolutely not. On to the next one.
The Baltimore Orioles. My Orioles, and when I speak to my Orioles, I'm talking about Chris Davis. Chris Davis was the Orioles MVP. Should he be?
As we should point out, finished with a worse record than the Nats, but go ahead.
Did they really?
Yes, they did.
It doesn't matter. I mean, we're in a better division. All you had was the Braves. Really? Come on now. We had Boston, Toronto, Boston, Tampa.
No, but one of the discussions that we had on the show was who would finish with a better record.
It doesn't really matter. They both didn't make the
playoffs. It makes a difference. It does, because
one
I was right
firing,
about
one is firing hey, listen, their manager, and the other listen, one's not.
They're not firing. They're letting him retire.
Whatever. It's cold. I'm kicking you out to the curb, son. Bye-bye.
Nah.
Get your old ass out of here. That's interesting. It's terrible.
They wanted him back for. Yeah. He wanted two. They only wanted to give him one.
Man, that's what happens when you get our. You know what I'm saying? You get our scraps, man. We had Davey first. You know what I'm saying? What did Ray J say? What did Ray J say about Kim Kardashian?
I hit it first. Did you ever see that video?
No, I didn't. I thought it was coonery in his finest.
Hilarious. The song itself is hilarious.
I just think that dude's a coon. I'm sorry. It is what it is. I know.
Wow, you really letting it flow today, huh?
Yeah, it may be strong, but that dude's something special. I'm sorry. But anyway, but should Chris Davis be the MVP as well, the whole AL?
Probably not. Probably go to Cabrera once again for what he's done. You know, got Detroit back into playoffs, even though it is got Detroit back into the playoffs, won a division title. So, but you know, he has a very impressive season offensively, though.
As an Orioles fan, you know, you probably would think I would pick Chris Davis, but no, I'm actually going to go with Miguel Cabrera. One, his team is going to the postseason. The Orioles are not. Secondly, he led the league in average. We're talking about a power hitter leading the league in average. I believe Chris Davis probably hit like 286. Now, Chris Davis did lead the league in home runs and RBIs, but Miguel Cabrera missed about 20 games. So at that point in time, he led the league in RBIs. Chris Davis already led the league in homers, but Miguel Cabrera had a nice lead within the RBI. So I can say and I can be confident in saying that Miguel Cabrera would have led the league in RBIs if he played the whole season. So in my vantage point, Miguel Cabrera is the MVP, still the best hitter in baseball. There's nobody at the point in time as a hitter better than Miguel Cabrera. Now, did Chris Davis play better defensively at first? Yeah, I mean, play a good defensive game at first? Yes, but when we're looking at when we're looking at as an offensive hitter, and that's how the MVP is really judged. People don't really look at defense unless you're like Griffey or a Mike Trout or something that's so well-rounded, then it won't be an impact in terms of the voting. But I posed a question on Facebook, and same question. My boy Jeffrey Free Kids Banks says, I'm an Orioles fan, and Cabrera deserves it. He is leading in two of the three major categories, which is wrong, but I corrected him earlier. So Davis had a heck of a year. My man George Templeton, stay supporting the show. Thanks, George. Says Miguel Cabrera, best player on the AL team favorite to win the AL. So I'm gonna start best player on the team favorite to win the AL. So yeah, I agree with you, George. Cabrera is on a team that has a chance to go to the World Series and win the World Series. Why not make him the MVP? And we all know those kind of awards are given to a player that's on probably the best team or the most impactful team to do something special.
True.
True. I know. I hear you. All right, true. Anyways, go down some more baseball. Baseball playoffs is about to start it starts tonight. But before yesterday, the Rays beat up on the Rangers, which was the play-in game for the postseason.
Yeah, I didn't watch. Saw the highlights on
real. I didn't watch.
Yeah, I saw the highlight. I saw the highlights on ESPN. David Price looked impressive on the mound for the Rays. You know, once again, another postseason heartbreak for the Rangers. You know,
Ron Washington. That's the thing you feel bad for. You feel bad for Ron Washington. I mean, a guy who admitted he was on drugs. He looks like he's on crack. He does. No, I'm sorry. Every time I look at Ron Washington, I think of like Ned DeWine or somebody on like Good Times or something. Like Good Times. He like somebody's on Good Times or something. Like, you know, that episode on Good Times or a episode on Good Times.
I won't laugh at that comment.
Struggling. Like they take him to the home and he does something dirty. Like, because he's just all laced out. I don't know, man.
Wow. He was something special.
It's too wrong. Every time I look at Ron Washington, I feel bad. I shake my head. I'm like, dude, are you okay? I'm like, that's what I think when I see Ron Washington. But anyway, let's go to Tampa real quick. I am so impressed with David Price because he started the season off struggling. And to pitch that game, which was so much pressure, and did a complete game, dominated the game, showed, you know, that he's going to go out with a bang because there's a chance that Tampa can't afford him anyway for the next season. So it's impressive to see what he put on the line for that team, showing that he's a leader. It's going to be interesting to see what the Rays and the Indians do because that's the actual one-game postseason game. The winner plays, I believe, the Boston Red Sox. The winner plays the Boston Red Sox. So
that's correct.
It's going to be an interesting game. I expect the Rays to win because they have better pitching. I believe Cobb is pitching that game. I forgot who he's pitching against for the Indians, but I expect the Rays to win because they have one of the best managers in baseball, and so does the Cleveland Indians with Francona. But I would go with Joe Maddon over anybody. So and that pitching staff is too trill, and then the hitting is improved compared to yesteryear. So I like to see I believe the Rays will advance to play the Red Sox, which should be a good series. In terms of the game tonight, which is the Reds versus the Pirates. That's going to be an interesting game. I'm going to be rooting for the Pirates.
I'm a root for Pittsburgh also. They don't have a lot going on for them now with the Steelers sucking it up. Plus also they haven't I don't know, question for you. Does this, you know, this one card, this one game playoff, does it actually seem like the playoffs to you?
You know,
it just seems like an extra game in the regular season.
No, you know what? I'll be biased. I'm going to say this is a biased dude. Last year for the Orioles when they played Texas, it seemed like a playoff game to me because it was so much pressure. You win this game, you're in. Like, you just, as I think as a fan, you feel like it's a playoff game. I think any one game playing, as a fan of that particular team, you think it's a playoff game because you lose, your team's out. You know what I mean? Like, it's a dirty game to me. I think it's the worst game to put any fan through. One, your team ends the season, and they say you make the postseason. One game and you're out. It's the worst. So it seems, for a fan, I believe it seems like a playoff game, but for like a person who has no emotion in the game, it doesn't seem like a
such
playoff game.
Such as myself.
Yeah, it doesn't have a playoff element to it.
Speaking of playoffs, this is totally different sports. NBA, did you hear they're changing the format back of the finals? 2-2-1-1-1.
This season?
Yeah, should take into effect this coming season.
Good. That should be fair, because I think that's the best team will win then.
NBA, you're doing it right now. Anything you have to do is go back to NBC.
Yeah, and did you hear about the nickname thing they're going to do?
Yeah, I heard about that, man.
You heard a it's a joke going around. I don't think you want to know about it, though. You
what?
Know about the joke?
No.
They're like, you know, LeBron James will be called, you know, LeBron the King James, probably. Ray Allen probably go to Jesus Shuttlesworth. They're like, well, you know, D-Wade was like, what? Like three, that's his name. He's gonna say three or something that he wants to go to, or something like that. They said Chris Bosh's name is gonna be something else. Some of I had it, because you know, already, what's the name of the guy who plays for the put it this way? He's from Baltimore. This guy's from Baltimore, played for UConn. What's his last name? He played for UConn. What's his last name?
He was played for UConn,
yeah.
He was I'm not, yeah. All right, next one.
Next one, Michael Jordan cannot get LeBron James off his mind to me. Michael Jordan states that he can beat LeBron James one-on-one. I mean, in his prime, he could beat LeBron James one-on-one.
Well, let's not take that out of context. He also said that he could beat Jerry West, Carmelo Anthony, Dwayne Wade.
He said Kobe Bryant either?
He said Kobe would have the most trouble with Kobe because Kobe stole all of his moves. No, that's the actual comment, because it was an interview in relation to the release of NBA 2K14.
Oh yeah,
which definitely is being released, I believe, today.
Yeah,
and then they asked him about playing certain people who could he beat one on one of the greatest players in their prime. He said Jerry West, I think he said Elgin Baylor, Carmelo, Dwayne Wade, LeBron.
Didn't they say Magic?
No, I didn't. I don't believe he said Magic. And he said the only person he thinks would have trouble, he would have trouble with, is Kobe, because Kobe stole all of his moves.
So that's the reason why Kobe would have problems. He would have a problem with Kobe Bryant. Struggles with Kobe Bryant. Stole all his moves. You know what, Jordan? I just want to say this to you. And now, again, obviously you're not gonna listen to me, and I don't really care. This is actually the first, I don't really care if you listen to me or not. Worry about the Charlotte Hornets and your acquisitions, because that's proof to the pudding that you don't really know anything about talent anyway, other than your own talent. So for you to assess who you can beat outside of yourself, I don't really care. Don't really care, because you thought Kemba Walker was going to be good. You actually thought Adam Morrison was better than Rudy Gay. You thought yeah, I'm still trying to figure out.
Yeah, as a personnel guy, he hasn't done the best.
Don't worry about who's better than who. LeBron James is the best player in the NBA. That's all you need to know.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you on that one.
That's all you need to know, man. So, LeBron, King James, don't sweat Michael Jordan. He kind of, you know, he has his thing for you. That he likes to think he's better than you. I think he's threatened by you, to be honest. I think he's threatened by King James.
I totally agree with you. I think he knows that even though Kobe, from a playing style and probably personality, was the closest thing that we've seen to Michael Jordan since Michael Jordan retired. I think he knows subconsciously that LeBron James will actually overshadow what will be in the conversation with him when it comes to the debate of who's the greatest ever when his career is over.
Yeah, but you know, Magic Johnson isn't worried about it, and that's the GOAT to me, so I don't really... concern myself with anything.
Magic is worth a couple $100 million because of his business endeavors. He's not worried about what anyone thinks about a comparison. Yeah.
Yeah, he's not really worried about it. But yeah, but that's what I think. I think, and like anybody, I mean, usually when people talk about certain individuals like this, especially when they're far and gone, is when they feel threatened. You know, like even Eric Dickerson with Adrian Peterson, he was like, well, he was actually up front. He was like, I don't want that dude breaking my record. Like, he pretty much was talking about it.
Yeah, I think, and that's a very honest and real reaction. Just like, you know, I think if anyone was ever fired from a job or something, you're not going to want that job or to be successful without you. So I think that's honesty.
That's true. All right, next topic. This is something that Will knows about. I didn't get to see the fight, but, you know, I heard a lot about it. Chavez Jr. defeating Vera. Is that his name, Vera?
Brian Vera, yeah.
Brian Vera defeating him in a controversial fight on Saturday night, excuse me.
First of all, for the fight to even, I understood why the fight happened, but, you know, financially, for financial reasons. If neither one of them fought, they wouldn't have gotten paid. But because of all of the wishy-washiness and the Chavez not being able to make weight, I find that utterly disgusting, because originally the fight was contracted at 163 pounds. Then once it was determined Chavez couldn't make 163, then it was moved to 168. Then 2 to 3 days before the fight, there was no way that Chavez wanted to or could make weight, so they moved it to 173 or 172 pounds. As you know, anyone who saw the fight saw that when Chavez came into the ring, Chavez weighed easily at least 195-200 pounds. Brian Vera, once he rehydrated for the fight, Brian Vera was at a total disadvantage from a size standpoint, because Brian Vera couldn't weigh any more than 180 pounds on the night of the fight. So for him to take the fight is dangerous in that respect. But the decision was actually a terrible decision. Even though Chavez did land far more effective clean power punches, from every statistical punch stat, Brian Vera won from total of jabs, power punches landed. Even though Chavez had better accuracy because he threw less shots. And even if you just look at them at the end of the fight, you know, Chavez was very swollen, cut up. Brian Vera looked like he had been in a fight, but not to the degree that Chavez was in. Chavez Jr. is, to me, spoiled, undisciplined, and he's the reason why gives boxers a bad name. Having said that, but he does bring substantial financial revenue to the table because of his following, because of the name and the following. What's next for him? He said that he wants to campaign at 168. You'll probably see him fight. I doubt they'll put him in the ring with Carl Froch, because Carl Froch will eat him up. But you'll probably see him fight
enough. Carl Froch will eat him up?
Absolutely.
I think it'll be Carl Froch.
No.
You heard it here first.
No.
I want to fight Andre Ward, so Andre Ward can beat.
Yeah, he'll fight Andre Ward, but
because that's a whole bust him up. Why do you think? I don't think Froch can hurt him.
Froch can hurt him.
You think so?
Definitely. Definitely. Right. I think Carl Froch can outbox him, keep him. He'll do the same thing that Sergio Martinez did to him. Keep him on the end of a jab. You know, Chavez will land some powerful body shots that might wear him down. But no, I think Carl Froch will eat him up.
All right. We'll agree to that.
Arthur Abraham, yeah, he can win that fight. That's a total winnable fight for him versus Arthur Abraham. Okay. But Carl Froch, no. They wouldn't put him in the ring with Froch. But ultimately, what HBO and Top Rank, which you'll see them trying to do, is set up a big matchup between Andre Ward and Chavez Jr., and that would be kind of the fight that, you know, even though a lot of people, you know, a lot of boxing purists and guys who are really fans of boxing know that Andre Ward is clearly the second best pound-for-pound fighter.
Yeah, definitely.
This would be the type of fight that would get Andre Ward the notoriety to the masses if he fights a guy like Chavez Jr., so But Chavez Jr., you're a piece of shit, and you are disgusting
to
me.
Why we got a curse?
He just is. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. That's repulsive. For him to say, come out and say that I didn't want to make the weight, it's just disgusting to me.
He said he didn't want to make the weight?
He said he didn't want to make the weight.
And his reasons for that was?
It's not a championship fight. I don't have to make the weight.
Oh, he is spoiled. You ain't never lie. You ain't never. He's definitely living off his daddy.
Absolutely.
Well, anyway, it's about time for a break. We'll pretty much went into unboxing. I don't have anything to add. I told you because I didn't see the fight. So it's time for a break. When we get back, we'll talk about my Redskins finally getting a W.
Operation Patience is over.
Yes, we got a W. And in 2 weeks' time, the best week in the world for me. It's the Urban Sports Scene, the Israel Network.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Blow up last season. Every win. Every loss. Every headline. Blow it all up. 'Cause all that matters is what you do next.
Don't mind me, baby. Bounce. We're taking over summer. Bounce. Y'all get it. Let's take them all, champ.
Hi, I'm Sonny Jurgensen, and you're listening to the Eyes Radio Network.
You can listen to our show by visiting our official Urban Sports Scene website, which is www.walio.podbeam.com. We're also on iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. And if you have any questions or comments, just email us at urbansports@eyesradio.com. You can also listen to us on the Sports Crib Podcast Show on Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just visit www.blogtalkradio.com/WC Stiller Fan. The show is produced by West Coast Stiller Fan. All right, time to go to the game. The Redskins beating the Raiders. Great game. Well, for me, being a Redskin fan, it started off so terrible. We're down 14-0. That all of a sudden.
But they persevered.
We persevered. All of a sudden, you know, we ran a no huddle situation. So we scored 3 points, 14-3. And then, you know, David Amerson, rookie from NC State, cornerback, with a pick six. And that changed the game. Basically changed momentum of what was going on. So happy the Redskins won the game. Roy Helu played big. I've been saying for weeks that Roy Helu should get more carries, more touches. Due to the injury to Alfred Morris, who got hurt with a rib injury, couldn't come back in the game. And Roy Helu got in the game and did special things. And the defense played well. I think Arakpo and Kerrigan, who I was talking about last week, how Arakpo, he was going to do his thing. He did his thing, two sacks, had stopped the team on fourth and inch. And then, you know, Ryan.
Against the backup offensive lineman? Absolutely, he did his thing.
Backup offensive lineman? No, it's an offensive lineman. I don't get how people take advantage of everybody. You're supposed to take advantage of the weak link. That's what football is all about. You take advantage.
No, I just think it's duly. I think when you're talking about these things, I think that we have to have full disclosure.
He had both sides. He didn't just play one side, they rotated him on either side. He did his job. Regardless.
Yeah, so against the offensive line that was missing three starters. And I think for full disclosure, we need to tell these things.
He did his job.
I agree with you, but I'm just giving full disclosure to the people. I'm giving them knowledge. I'm feeding them knowledge.
Why mention that part like it had anything to do with anything?
Listen, I'm just feeding knowledge. That's all I'm about.
Again, let me do a fact. Rockford had two sacks in the game. Ryan Kerrigan did his job as always. Had two sacks himself. Cofield dominated. Dominated the interior, had two sacks. He's played better without the cast on his hands, so now he can actually use his hands and pretty much play how he played in the preseason. So the D line looks improved now. Seven sacks. It looks improved. And I don't care what anybody tells me. You get seven sacks in the game. I don't care how bad that O line is,
or how bad that quarterback is.
How bad your quarterback is, that's still an accomplishment. It's seven sacks.
Seven sacks is seven sacks, and I totally agree with you. I didn't watch the game. I listened to it on the radio. I listened to all of it on the radio.
Off the radio. We talking about
I'm listening to it on the radio. So I listened to the game live. I listened to the game live. I didn't actually physically see the game, but I did actually listen to the game live on the radio. Should be noted that they were missing Terrell Pryor. Didn't
that
start.
That was that again. They were missing Terrell Pryor, and we knocked out Run DMC out the game.
Yeah. So I was very upset about that because I actually had him on my fantasy football team.
I was upset to have him on my fantasy football team. Yeah. I was upset about
that. And those first two runs, I was like, yes.
Good. Good.
I was like, he's going to get 100. Y'all, at least 120, easily.
Easily 120,
yeah.
Easily.
Yeah, but I was kind of upset about that.
Yeah, I know Redskins fans are probably looking at me and saying, you had McFadden against your own team. You're damn right. I did. And
it's all about winning. It's all about winning.
I don't lose.
About winning.
I don't like losing.
All yeah. Right. David Emerson, as I stated, you know, from the start and from the preseason, this guy, you know, I think he's the first corner that the Redskins have had in a long time, whose mentality is that's my ball when it goes and once you throw it against him. That what's interesting is, as I was hearing on the radio, the Redskins can still continue to sub out London Fletcher for Nick Barnett,
which needs to happen.
I'm not saying it shouldn't happen, but I just something that's interesting to me. Offensively, Alfred Morris went out of the game, and Roy Helu more than adequately filled in for him. Roy Helu had a very big game. He's actually from out that area, if I'm not mistaken. Correct?
From California. I believe he should be from from that area. I'm not sure.
Yeah, so he had a big game. One thing that a position that was at the beginning of the season, preseason, that was very deep for the Redskins, tight end position. They don't seem to, with Jordan Reed out, Logan Paulson out, and Fred Davis just not playing up the stuff. It just seems like that position's they're lacking a lot, and that's one of the key positions in their offense.
Miles Paul.
Yeah. What else could I say? Redskins fans should be very excited because Rob Jackson and Jarvis Jenkins
coming back.
Return from their four-game suspension. So maybe we'll see the defense get better after the bye week against Dallas, which, next week will be a huge week for Redskins week. Fans, they call it Dallas week. It's like homecoming or something like that.
It's the greatest thing in the world. It's better than Disneyland or Disney World.
Have you ever been to Disney World?
I've been to Disney. That's in Orlando, right?
Yeah.
Disney World's in Orlando.
Disney World
is Orlando, and Disneyland is somewhere else, right?
In California.
I've been to Disney World.
Okay.
I've been to Disney World.
What else was I going to state? Special teams is still a huge problem.
It's horrendous.
It's a huge problem. I don't know. Maybe they need to get Brian Mitchell in there to work with the special teamers a little bit. Anyone who knows Brian Mitchell still in this area, one of the greatest, probably the greatest special team returns man in the history of the NFL.
I like Mel Gray, so I'm a little biased. I like Mel Gray. Brian Mitchell, I mean, I'm a Redskin fan, but
I think statistically the numbers still speak for
himself. I thought Mel Gray was more exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, he was good on Madden and Tecmo Bowl. Just saying.
That's old school.
Yeah.
what else was I going to say about the Redskins? They actually, like I said, this was a must win for them, and they actually got the win. So they're still in contention because Dallas is 2-2.
They're playing the Broncos.
And they play the Broncos.
On Sunday.
They play the Broncos on Sunday. So that should be interesting with the way that Peyton Manning has been victimizing defenses for the first 4 weeks. Philadelphia Eagles are 1-3. Redskins are 1-3, and the Giants, surprisingly, are 0-4 at the bottom of the division. So no one's running away with this division. It's in all likelihood, Dallas would be 2-3 at the end of this weekend. Maybe the Redskins are off week. Is Philadelphia, do they? Yeah, they play the Giants. So I'm actually predicting that the Giants will get their first victory against Philadelphia. So no one's running away with this division. And, if the Redskins can – they have a tough schedule down the rest of the stretch, but if they take it week by week, as we saw last year, if Robert Griffin III, this would be the fourth week of the season.
Yeah, so 4 weeks, so it'll be week six when he gets back. It'll be week six.
Yeah, so hopefully he should be fully healthy. I'm not gonna say fully healthy, but he'll have his knee from a medical standpoint will be it'll be the 9 month mark, which a lot of people predicted it would take 7 to 9 months for him to fully heal. So after nine months, we'll see where he goes from there, and if he can elevate his play to the level that he did last year, he can help this team make a strong playoff run because a lot of people are forgetting about that 7-game stretch last year. It wasn't that the Redskins were great. It was just that Robert Griffin III played at such a high level. He masked a lot of deficiencies
that's
for this team. So if he can do that again, he can help them make another magical playoff run.
Well, you know, Will mentioned the return of Rob Jackson and Jarvis Jenkins. I think that's very important for people to understand because what's going to happen is that when Rob Jackson gets back, Arakpo can now play more of a rush end. Maybe that'll put him down on the line, and you know, because he's uncomfortable. And honestly, all pass rushers are uncomfortable in coverage. So he's uncomfortable in coverage. And Rob Jackson's better off in coverage. You saw the big plays he made last season. I think he had 4 interceptions.
Especially against Dallas, key interception.
Yeah, man, 4 interceptions last season. You have Arakpo on the D-line rushing the passer when he's really accustomed doing. And we even seen Ryan Kerrigan. They play Ryan Kerrigan sometimes in nose tackle and sometimes the other at the other end spot, not the stand-up spot in the linebacker, but the other end spot in the 3-4 scheme. So you have more you can do with Rob Jackson back. So on certain downs, like maybe third down, you can have Rob Jackson in coverage and Arakpo, his hands on the ground, ready to rush the passer. So it makes the defense more versatile having Rob Jackson back. And Jarvis Jenkins, though we have not seen him play at the level he played in preseason before he tore his ACL, but you know, it's year two of the ACL, so we all expect him to be at that level. So having a Jarvis Jenkins back playing at a high level, we heard in training camp in his rookie year and in the preseason, if he can play to that caliber, this defense can be improved with these two coming back. I would be negligent to not talk about the heart and the passion Pierre Garçon played in the Oakland game. The dude is a bad dude, and what I mean by that is he runs every route, he plays every play like it's the last play he's going to play, period.
He reminds me of Anquan Boldin once he gets that ball in his hands after the run. He's like a running back.
Yeah.
He has physical.
He has a mean spirit when he has that ball in his hand. And I like it. It's refreshing. It kind of reminds me of, you talk about Anquan Boldin. I'm going to talk about somebody who used to play for the Washington Redskins. He reminds me of Gary Clark. Like Gary Clark was fearless. He was fearless. Not that he can break tackles, but it's just his personality. It's like, I'm going to get the ball. I don't care where I catch it at. You hit me, I'm good. I don't care. Just the toughness of it.
Yeah, but one thing the offense does need for a spark to reignite, they need Josh Morgan to come back and play more consistent.
Don't need Josh Morgan. He's not doing anything. They have Hankerson has already played
better. Yeah, I mean, Hankerson's playing better, but you know, it's the more weapons you have, the further you can stretch the field, and the better the offensive look.
I know what you're saying. Yeah, obviously, you want all your guns to do something. You know what I mean? Truth be told, be honest with you, you mentioned Josh Morgan. What they need is like Archer Robinson to wake up, like a guy who can beat you deep. He's electric because he can get open. He can get open deep. I mean, he has great speed. Catch the ball. Make plays. They need some of these other wide receivers.
As we saw in the Detroit game, he can beat. You know,
he can beat you, but can he finish? Can he finish the play? And I don't know. We can't definitely say that. So, but I'm a harp on what Will said. Yes, the Redskins were very lucky that Terrell Pryor didn't play. Terrell Pryor is a dangerous dude. I don't want anybody to think Oakland. I hate when people say like the Redskins beat Oakland because they're terrible. Oakland's not terrible. They just were hurt.
No, and one thing also be noted. What's the guy who started for Oakland?
Oh, Matt Flynn.
Matt Flynn, the worst NFL quarterback.
It's amazing that he can get so many, like, people are believing him so much. Like, Green Bay to Seattle. It didn't work out with Seattle, went to Oakland. Why do people believe in Matt Flynn so much? Did you see Matt Flynn in LSU? Like, that's the question I always ask people. Did you see Matt Flynn in college? Because I saw Matt Flynn in college, and I never thought of him as an NFL quarterback.
Terrible. Like, he reminded me of what's the guy who said that he was going to be the starting quarterback for the Redskins after the
John lockout? Beck.
Beck. Yeah. He reminded me a lot of John Beck with all the checkdowns. Captain checkdown.
But he held the ball for so long. He gave us opportunities to get the 7 sacks.
Yeah, for those 7 sacks.
Yeah,
because you have to realize that the Redskins secondary is nowhere near.
Someone had to be open.
Yeah, someone had to be open for you to hold the ball that long. You just gun shy.
Yeah, but now you know after the first quarter of the season, which side of the ball we can look at it right now? Everybody's been talking negatively about the defense, but which side of the ball, in your opinion, should fans be more concerned of, the offense or the defense?
Because you're getting back a key pass rusher, Rob Jackson, and you're getting
not a pass rusher. He's not really a good pass rusher.
Well, he's a good he can rush the pass, and he's more a far more versatile linebacker.
I got you.
because you're getting back a versatile linebacker and a guy on a D line who can play pretty stout and play pretty tough against the run, I'm going to say the offense should be a bigger concern at this point for this reason. Robert Griffin III isn't playing to the level that he played that last year. So I will, if I was a Redskins fan, I would be concerned for that. And also I would want to know, because of the emergence of Roy Alou in this game, I want to know, what are you going to do to incorporate him more into the game plan? Because now you have Alfred Morris, a guy who ran for 1,600 yards, and you have a guy like Roy Alou. You can have, you know, the best help for a struggling defense is a strong run game.
The best help for a struggling quarterback is a strong running game as well.
Yeah, so you can really control the clock with those two running the ball. So I would have far more concerns against the offense. Will the Shanahans continue to run the ball effectively and put Robert Griffin III in situations where he can excel in the pistol offense and also in the read option?
Like, it's good thinking, Sam. I like the way you think.
Yeah,
I'm thinking the same way. I have more concerns about the offense. And I posed this question on Facebook and Twitter. And I'll talk about it later. But you know, a lot of people, you know, are just enamored. You know, are stuck on the point that the defense was giving all these yards and bad tackling. Yes, they have bad tackling. Defense is not a good defense. I understand. But the offense isn't a good offense as well. They still can't score touchdowns in the first half, which is ridiculous. With the talent we do have, we can't score a touchdown in the first half. Is something that shouldn't be tolerated. The defense has made big plays in most of the games. Now, winning or losing, whatever. D-Hall has two touchdowns, one pick six, one fumble recovery for a touchdown. Emerson has a pick six. They're turning the ball over. They're getting turnovers. The defense is making plays. If we want to be real with the whole situation, which side of the ball is making plays? We can't say it's the offense, because the offenses aren't. They're not making plays when the game counts. You know what I mean? If it was for Emerson's interception, do we win that game? Probably not. If we look at the Detroit game. Who started the momentum off with that pick six? D'Angelo Hall. Who, after that, again, the offense had a chance to make a big play. It wasn't RG3's fault. RG3 bombed Archer Robinson. He dropped it. Again, not making the big play. The big plays are coming from the defense. It's not coming from the offense. So for us to continue to say, okay, the offense, the defense needs help. They're the ones holding us down. I don't believe in that, because really the team as a whole sucks. Both sides suck. Special teams is horrible. All elements of this team sucks. But if I'm gonna look at a team, the side of the ball that's making plays, it's the defense.
I totally agree with you. We agree on something.
Finally. But like I said, I posed the same question on Facebook. My man Tony Snow said the defense at the secondary is the big issue. My man Keith was like, the defense from what I see, which part of D needs fixing first? Secondary. Like Tony Snow said, my man Yada said defense, tackling. The tackling's an issue. Don't get me, the tackling's ridiculous. I think the tackling reminds me of, like, I think high school kids tackle better.
Yeah, and one more thing that people should remember about tackling in the NFL, they don't teach tackling in the NFL. Tackling is something you should already know.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of like, you know, when you go to college and you go into a math class, they're not going to teach you how to add. You should already know how to add and subtract and multiply. So when players come to the pro, they don't necessarily spend a lot of time practicing tackling. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, you're cool, man. You're real. That's real. My man John Richardson said the defense, don't let that performance against the bum Raiders fool you, especially with Matt Flynn starting and Derek McFadden being hurt. Shout-outs to Kerrigan for balling out in every game so far without all the talk. My man Nate said their defense and below-average offense. So he's saying both. Truth be told, the read option is dead for every team that thought – that it would be the bread and butter, and special teams are starting to suck too. Basically, the team as a whole sucks. All right, hold on real quick. Nate, you're a Steelers fan, so stop it, okay?
One thing I don't agree with Nate on about the read option, it's just that teams are not running it.
Yeah.
They aren't putting their quarterback in harm's way. The quarterbacks aren't pulling the ball back with as frequently as they did last year. I still think the read option is very viable in the NFL. Only thing you have to do is just look at how teams cover the coverage and the rush changes towards the teams like San Francisco, the Redskins, and Seattle when they do run the read option, when they run it and when they don't.
And my homegirl Tabitha, what's up, Tabitha? It says both. Offense sucking right now, and the defense needs to go over tackling drills, which is already mentioned. So, yeah, pretty much same thing. Tackling drills, offense sucks. We all know the offense sucks. All I'm saying is the offense is not making plays, and defense is.
Yeah.
All right. Real quick, also, let's go down. I mentioned Arakpo earlier. This area, I was driving into work when I did work before the shutdown, you know, before A-hole Congress took over. So...
You just won't drop it,
will
you?
I will not, because I wish they would not get paid. And I was listening to the people talking about Arakpo, and they were like, you know, he played good. He had 2 sacks. Regardless, whatever, he had 2 sacks. People calling in like, he's still not good. I mean, dude has 3 sacks in the season. He has more sacks than Clay Matthews, who everyone thinks is like one of the best pass rushers in the NFL. Arakpo has 3 sacks. Still on, it's on pace to probably have, on pace to have 10 sacks, 10+ sacks, on pace.
On pace, true.
All right. Why do people hate Arakpo in this area so much?
I don't think people hate.
Dislike him. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, dislike is more apt word to use. I think it's because he showed so much promise during that rookie season. And from there on out, it's kind of, you know, we went over the stats last week. 11, we had the argument.
11 sacks his first year, 9.5 second year, I believe 8 his third year.
Yeah.
And the rest, he's been hurt.
Yeah, so for, like you stated, he hasn't been healthy. And he hasn't lived up to that. He hasn't gotten back to the first season numbers. And he also, there's a perception, whether it's true or not, and, you know, from fans, it might be the perception may be different from fans and actual players in the NFL. People don't perceive him as an elite. Fans don't perceive him as an elite pass rusher. As one of those guys that when the Redskins on the schedule, you're like, oh snap, we got to prepare to block Brian Arakpo. There are certain defensive ends and linebackers that even fans and even NFL players, when they see them on the schedule, they'll know, man, I got to bring my lunch today, pack a lunch and my hard hat, because this guy is going to bring it every play, like a Jared Allen, like DeMarcus Ware, you know, I can say Aldon Smith because he has the stats, but if Justin Smith isn't playing,
Aldon Smith isn't effective.
Yeah, Von Miller, yeah. We don't know how he'll be post drugs, and I'm trying to think who else.
From an end standpoint?
From an end standpoint, Jason Pierre-Paul.
Well, Jason Pierre-Paul ain't that good right now. Yeah, he hasn't been good anymore.
Yeah.
But they do see, that's funny. So they registered Jason Pierre-Paul, but Jason Pierre-Paul hasn't been good
since that first year.
So it's amazing. That's, again, I guess it's interesting to me in this city or this area. I mean, for the Redskin fan base, is just how negative they are with a Brian Arakpo. But like, for instance, Jason Pierre-Paul, excuse me. People when you see, when fans see him, they are scared, right?
Right.
All right.
But he has still considered him one of the elite pass rushers.
But he really, if you look, now we're going off of comparing his stats with Brian Arakpo's first 3 seasons, other than Jason Pierre-Paul's first season, Brian Arakpo still consistently is close to 10. Pierre-Paul had a big drop-off. Wasn't even close, I believe. Without being, like, hurt for most of the season.
There's truth to that.
You know what I mean? So that's what amazes me. Like when he puts a full season together, he's close to 10 sacks. And to me, it's not a coincidence that Ryan Kerrigan's on pace to probably get his best sack total with Brian Arakpo back. You know what I mean?
No, I totally agree with you because, you know, if you don't have to double Kerrigan, you know, leave him one-on-one, he's clearly showed that he's one of the better linebackers in this league.
Yeah.
With Arakpo, he'll take some of that coverage away from some of those double teams away from Kerrigan. So, you know, we'll see. You know, maybe, you know, Redskins fans just don't like him.
Yeah, I just think they don't like him. It's annoying to me, you know, being a Nigerian individual.
419, baby.
Exactly. And Arakpo was a Nigerian dude. And to me, I think when I watch and I hear NFL offensive linemen talk about Arakpo, I think they do have a little fear. They're concerned. I mean, like they're not shaking their boots. They're concerned. Put it that way. They're concerned that he's coming to town because they respect that he has talents as a pass rush that you have to worry about. I mean, even thinking about it, like the Green Bay Packer game when Arakpo had that last sack, Aaron Rodgers pretty much told Arakpo, "Yeah, I'm done with the five step drops. I'm going more 3-step drops and getting the ball out quick because you're getting there too quick. You know what I mean? You're getting there when I do the 5-step drop." So it's telling you that he's getting pressure. I always like in most of the games this season he's gotten pressure. You know, other than the Eagles game, I'm gonna say when you know he's going against your guy.
Jason Peters,
who's a left tackle, meaning that he's going against the best, right? Mm-hmm. He's going against the best tackle every week, pretty much. Jason Peters. Other than Jason Peters, who's probably one of the best tackles in football, period, he's done well.
Yeah, I mean, maybe after this season, it's a change the perception amongst Redskins fans of Brian Arakpo. Maybe he gets back to that 10-11 sack season, mm-hmm. Presents constant pressure, and you know the perception of him within the league and within fans.
I know the
is
league.
Different.
I know the fans. I don't know the league. What do you think of the league? Since you're not a Redskins fan, what do you think?
Well, I don't think that offenses stay up at night worried about Brian Arakpo.
Do you think they worry? Do you think they worry more about Kerrigan?
Yeah, I think that offensive coordinators worry a little bit, and you can tell just from the way that the protection shifts a little bit more towards Kerrigan.
Okay.
Sometimes, you know, because Kerrigan plays on the strong side of the line, you know, there's typically a tight end lined up. He has to line up over top of the tight end. And, you know, sometimes on occasions you'll see them chip a little bit more towards Kerrigan's side. Arakpo is in one-on-one
With the tackle.
Yeah, with the tackle, with the left tackle. But typically your left tackle is your better pass protection tackle.
Yeah, so you hope not to give him help anyway. He's the best.
Absolutely. Tackle. So you know, we'll see. You know, we'll see. I do think that, you know, within the league, I think people do think that Ryan Kerrigan is more of a threat bringing consistent pressure.
Ryan Kerrigan, don't get me wrong, I think Ryan Kerrigan at the moment is the better defensive. Is the better linebacker. DN, whatever you want to call it, in the 3-4 for the Washington Redskins. He makes more plays. He has more sacks right now. But my thing about it is that if I'm going to play devil's advocate, Ryan Kerrigan hasn't had a 10 sack season yet.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I could say this: Arakpo has had 11 sacks one season without anybody on the other side to help him out. So Kerrigan's had the opportunity to have a double-digit sack season with nobody as a threat on the other end.
Yeah, you know, if Arakpo, we all see that Arakpo struggles in pass coverage.
Yeah.
When his strongest attribute is rushing the passer. If you get him, maybe if the Redskins were in, you know, in nickel or dime situations when he has his hand on the ground, he's a far better player.
Yeah, so I mentioned the same thing. Why do people dislike Brian? Why Redskins fans dislike Brian Arakpo so much? My man Thomas Carroll, Arakpo just needs to work on defending the run better, but he makes the Redskins defense a lot better and makes Kerrigan even more productive. I agree with you. My man Jeffrey, the Kid Banks, says, man, he ain't LT. His numbers will get him paid what he's worth. We have seen what he looked like without him and Superman on the field at the same time. Pay the man and keep it moving. My man Rodney Scott, who hates on Arakpo like no other. What's up, Rod? Says he's not that good. The dude only has one move, and that's a bull rush. if he's not stronger than the left tackle, he does nothing. My man Jeremy Gordon Commish says is he that much better than Rob Jackson? He has no career interceptions and struggles in coverage and against the run. Good player, but he is far from a playmaker, and he will be grossly overpaid no matter what. Factor in two major injuries, too. Let's see. That's about it. Yes, I'm going to mention. Commissioner, we discussed this earlier. He's way better than Rob Jackson. Don't get me wrong. Rob Jackson had a good little stint, the 4 interceptions, a good little spark for us. He's better in coverage. That's true. But Arakpo is a pass rusher. It's really beneficial for the Washington Redskins. You saw how our pass rush was last season without him. Rob Jackson did a good job in coverage, but in pass rushing situations, quarterbacks had a lot of time on the other side. Kerrigan had to be the man to put the pressure on the quarterback. With Arakpo, now you see the pocket collapsing even faster. Teams don't have that much time to find anybody. You know, now, granted, the secondary is horrible. They give you time that it makes it so quick for somebody to be open, because especially our secondary leaves people open so quickly. But you have to, you know, you have to respect the Washington Redskins front when with Arakpo back there. Period. Now with Arakpo going wide edge, that gives Kerrigan room to get that quarterback on the other side. So they work really good together. I think they're dominating. To me, potentially they could be a dominating duo. But let's go on to the next thing. The next topic, with the Redskins having to buy, is it a good time for the Redskins in their buy? Put it that way.
I think it is, just because, you know, as we alluded to earlier, you know, with Rob Jackson and Jarvis Jenkins coming back in, you can these guys get a full week of practice to integrate themselves back in. As we talked about, this will be the 9-month period for Robert Griffin III. So I think those two things combined make this kind of, I'm not going to say the opportune time because of the way they've been playing. Excuse me, for them to have their bye week, even though this does, you know, you take this on the flip side, this means that for 12 straight weeks they'll be playing with no break. So unless they have a team like Jacksonville on the schedule, then that makes, you know, that's an off week.
I wish. Oh, is that Jacksonville on the schedule? I don't think so. I think the bye is coming at a good time because we get 2 weeks to prepare for Dallas. And I think just one thing I'll give Shanahan credit. You give him a couple of weeks to prepare for you, the team will come out and prove. Would that mean a W? Maybe, maybe not. But the team will look better for that team. They will look very prepared for Dallas. You get 2 weeks. I'm getting 2 weeks to prepare for a team like the Cowboys. RG3, another week for him to get healthy. Maybe, like Will said, hopefully get him close to the old RG3 as possible. That would be awesome. Will it happen? Well, who knows? And for the defense, you know, just getting the defense confidence. The defense had a good outing with the Raiders. And to me, confidence is a thing that can kind of, it's contagious. I mean, in terms of playing well. So you get a situation where you played well, and then you can kind of carry that over a good week, a good couple of weeks of practice, and that team's going to feel better about themselves. The secondary probably is going to play better. The D-line, Arakpo and Kerrigan will even be more confident in passing rushing the passer. So I think it's coming at a good time because this team's been bashed for, like, especially the defense side of the ball has been bashed for about 4 weeks, 3 weeks, and they kind of been praised on the third and the fourth week, but they've been bashed. So this is a good time to kind of get right mentally, and for RG3 too, get right mentally and see what's going to go on during bye week and that week preparing for Dallas.
Well said.
Thank you. It's about time for another commercial break. When we get back, we're going to talk about the world champion Baltimore Ravens. That sound about right?
That sounds about right.
They right? They lost to Buffalo.
They lost to Buffalo, the defending world champion.
The defending Baltimore. World champion Baltimore Absolutely. Ravens losing to the Buffalo Bills.
And the $20 million quarterback in his 5 interceptions.
Oh, yeah. Is he elite? That's the question. It's the Urban Sports Team on Eyes Radio on the Eyes Radio Network.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Time out! Okay, guys, Summers really had his bell rung and could have a concussion. I'm pulling him out for the game. Rodriguez, you're in for Summers.
Come on, coach. It's just a ding. I'll shake it off.
Yeah, he's tough. Plus, we need to win this to make the playoffs.
Listen, we're a team and we need to look out for each other. Concussions are serious. No game is more important than your health.
Take concussions out of play. If you're a coach, know the warning signs and never let athletes return to play before a healthcare professional says it's okay. A message from CDC.
This is Ryan Kerrigan, and you're listening to the Eyes Radio Network.
You can also listen to us on Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Apple G's Radio Show. Just visit www.blogtalkradio.com/Apple G's. The show is hosted by Coach and the lovely Vivian.
Sup, Coach and Viv. Hope you guys are doing well.
Yeah, me too. All right, Ravens, the defending world champions, Baltimore Ravens, fell to the Buffalo Bills. Oh, it was a tough loss.
It was an ugly loss.
Tough loss, man. Real tough loss.
Very ugly loss.
I'm going to let you start real quick because you had some interesting things to say
$20 million quarterback threw 5 interceptions. I know that the Buffalo Bills defense is good, but they aren't great for him to throw 5 interceptions. That just goes to show that, you know, without – did Ray Rice play, right?
Yeah, Ray Rice played.
But wasn't 100%.
He wasn't 100%. He didn't look – we'll talk about that, too. He didn't look like himself either, but go ahead.
Yeah, without Ray Rice at 100%, and with that, with this team as a run-first team with a strong defense, maybe, you know, this kind of gives people some inclination of whether Joe Flacco is really an elite franchise quarterback. You'll say that he is because he's getting paid $20 million a year. And he won a Super Bowl in that magical Super Bowl run where he threw, I believe it was 11 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, and completed almost 60% of his pass.
Lucky play, too, also. To Jacoby Jones. Go ahead, continue.
Well, you know, that's neither here nor there. but for $20 million a year, this is the type of game you put your team on. And although they did have a chance to win this game, I believe Buffalo won it 23-20, and that last interception came when Joe Flacco was driving to get the team in the position to win for a win. As a $20 million a year quarterback, you don't do these types of things. I understand that once in a while you have a bad game. No one's perfect. But for $20 million, you put your team on the back when the offense is struggling. You throw receivers open. You make plays. And you lead your team to a win on the road against a team that's young and relatively inexperienced like the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, it's tough for the it's tough right now for the Ravens. The running game isn't doing what it did in yesteryears. Flacco has a lot. He has a lot on his shoulders now. He has to carry the team, you know, being a leader. And they're not. They weren't built for that, in my opinion. This is a team historically that's been built on defense and in a power running game and play action. They don't have that right now. I know, obviously, Caldwell, offensive coordinator, likes to spread out, and that's good, and then that's a way of winning too, but they still need Ray Rice to do his thing. They need Pierce to back up Ray Rice and do his thing as well, and they need Flacco to play off of them. And right now, Flacco isn't doing the job as an elite quarterback for this team. That contract is going to also, like Will said, the contract is going to make you elite. You're getting paid $20 mil, you're elite in everybody's vantage point. When I look at you and you're in that kind of contract, I'm thinking Breeze, Manning, Brady, even I think he just paid more than Phillip Rivers, who I think is a better quarterback than Joe Flacco. So, and Aaron Rodgers, excuse me, no, I knew I forgot somebody. So, when I look at that contract, I'm thinking the best of the best. And I know you want a Super. And that's the thing. This is the only thing to knock about winning a Super Bowl, and people want to call him a winner. When you win a Super Bowl, and the way he did it, yes, he had a good run. He deserved to get paid, and a lot of people they play on that, you know what I mean? And obviously it's the job of an agent to take advantage of that too and prey on that. But in terms of the media, once he won that Super Bowl, we all thought, oh yeah, Joe Flacco's this, Joe Flacco's that. But you know, there's a resume out there before the Super Bowl, before a streak. Joe Flacco has been a particular quarterback. He is who we thought he was. That's never changed.
True.
You know what I mean? So It's gonna be an interesting situation in Baltimore to see what they can do. Now they lost to a tough team to beat at home in the Buffalo Bills. The Buffalo Bills at home play a particular brand of football, and you know EJ Manuel and Stevie Johnson, even the rookie Woods out of USC,
CJ Spiller, Fred Jackson.
A little bit though. Fred Jackson
was running hard. Buffalo, offensively, they have some weapons. You know, on defense, they have Marcell Dareus, who just a couple years ago was the 3rd overall pick. You have Mario Williams, the highest paid defensive lineman in NFL history.
Yeah, he's now starting to ball, though.
He's starting to play up to that contract.
If you can play up to that contract. Yeah.
And so, you know, they have some pieces, but ultimately, I think that's a game that the Ravens should have won.
Oh, definitely. The turnovers is the reason why they lost that game.
Yeah.
You saw they were still in the game with all those turnovers even happening. So, yeah, they got some things to do. I think they're better. To me, they're a better home team anyway. So they'll bounce back at home on the road. I think they're very vulnerable when you play that Ravens team. But I mentioned Ray Rice. What's wrong with Ray Rice in the running game right now?
I don't know. It just doesn't seem like they're firing off the ball like they did previously. in previous years. And also teams are more willing to play eight in the box because you don't have any outside. Well, Torrey Smith can burn you. But, you know, last year you had Torrey Smith and you had Anquan Boldin. So you had guys who were threats to get open more readily. I just this year they don't have that at the wide receiver position.
So I just mentioned the same question on Facebook. My man Thomas Curl said they don't respect the wide receivers. Only threat is Torrey Smith, which Will just said. So not having Anquan Boldin seems to hurt. I like Marlon Brown, but Marlon Brown eventually is going to have to earn that respect. So to give Ray Rice some help and create more running lanes for Ray Rice as a threat. My man Kenyatta Scaife, what's up, Yada? Said Ray Rice is hurt. Yeah, Ray Rice coming off that injury, the hurt hip. But, you know, he still had a couple of games before that, and he looked still – I mean, the running game still wasn't looking effective. So we'll see how that pans out for the Baltimore Ravens with Ray Rice. I think Ray Rice eventually will get – he's too good of a running back to be held down. I think Ray Rice will get on that streak where he's effective in multiple games. But right now, obviously, it's difficult for Ray Rice. Let's go to the big question we already talked about. We glossed over it a little bit, but let's talk about Flacco. Is Flacco – overrated or underrated? Not even just talk about elite. Is he overrated or underrated in perception?
I guess we have to agree with the perception is, and I guess we can agree that the perception is he's elite. He's an elite quarterback. So I'll say that he's a bit overrated because at this point, Joe Flacco isn't going to go out and win a game for you. You know, there are certain quarterbacks like Tom Brady with a bunch of relatively unknown no-name wide receivers and young wide receivers, has that team rolling 4-0. Aaron Rodgers, before, you know, everyone knew, before Randall Cobb and Jordy Nelson, James Jones became household names, even though he had guys like Greg Jennings and Donald Driver, he made those guys.
Well, I'll say Greg Jones was good with Brett James Favre. Was good with Brett Favre.
Who?
James Jones? Yeah, it was good with Brett Favre. Because Brett Favre had a couple of these guys. He didn't have Cobb. I'm not sure.
He didn't have Cobb and he didn't have Jordy Nelson.
He didn't have Jordy Nelson. But he did have Jones and Jennings, though.
Just the way Aaron Rodgers gets, you know, throws those guys open. So I do think he's a bit overrated because the perception is he's a franchise quarterback. Too much money, and you can't build around him.
Yeah, I'm going to go with this statement. I'm not going to use the money. He is who we thought he was. I think a lot of us, when he got the money, we scratched our heads. We were like, you giving Joe Flacco this money? Like, he's getting 20? Like, even when the reports came out that Joe Flacco is about to be the highest paid quarterback, we were like, Joe Flacco? Like, then that's how we thought. So I'm going to go to the presumption that not overrated or underrated, he is who we thought he was. He's been very consistent. He is streaky. Joe Flacco is very streaky. When he's hot, he looks really good. When he's bad, he looks bad. You know, he's not like Breeze, Manning, Brady, Rodgers. When they're off, you're like, oh, they're still making plays, and they're not sharp to their caliber, but they're not really hurting the team. You get what I'm saying? They're not really hurting the team. When Joe Flacco looks bad, he's hurting the team. And that's the difference between, I guess you want to use the elite status and a player like Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco's a good quarterback. He's a good quarterback, but elite, I don't think so. My man Jordan Avery on our Facebook page says, what defines elite? Because if it is winning, then he's elite.
I don't think you can necessarily define winning as elite because winning doesn't – there's a lot of things that constitutes into a team winning. We have to remember that football is the ultimate team sport. You know, there are quarterbacks that win because of the run game. There are quarterbacks that win because they have a strong defense. So we can't necessarily put winning as elite. One thing that I use kind of is to gauge as elite, a 2-1 touchdown to pass interception ratio, a completion percentage in the high 65 and over, and does the guy consistently get his team to the divisional playoff round? That's why I think of guys that are elite quarterbacks.
This is how I look at elite or best quarterbacks, whatever you want to call it, and this is how I break it down. Or for somebody to say anything about winning. Dan Marino is elite and one of the best quarterbacks who ever played the game. Trent Dilfer has a ring. It is what it is.
That's a great way to sum it up.
Yeah, it is what it is. All right. NFL news, reports, and which is starting to annoy me, honestly. Reports floating around, well, not this, but reports floating around that former starting quarterback for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Josh Freeman, is asking to be cut, I mean, or released. Should the Bucs do it? Should they just cut him?
Well, I think just because of the circus that's ensuing after he's been demoted as a starter, I think, you know, the Bucs, they're going to try to hold out as long as they can to get something for him. So you probably won't see them make a move until, what is it, late November when the trade deadline is? Yeah, when the trade deadline is in November. But they should release him, try to get anything you can from him at this for this point, just because of the shenanigans and the tomfoolery that's going on with Greg Schiano. There's reports leaking out that he failed a drug test, which is supposed to be
folks are saying confidential. Yeah, folks are saying it's Greg Schiano that's leaked it out.
And I you know, just because of his personality and some of the things he's done, I'm not inclined to give Greg Schiano the benefit of the doubt to believe that he didn't do it.
Yeah.
And also there's word that's saying that when the team took a vote in the preseason that they did vote Josh Freeman as a captain, but Greg Schiano didn't give him the title of captain because he didn't want him to be the captain because he doesn't want him as his quarterback.
Yeah, they said that Greg Schiano probably tampered with that as well. Like you said, Greg Schiano came out and said that he didn't leak out the information that Josh Freeman was in the drug program in the NFL. Yeah, like this dude rubs me the wrong way. Seriously, you could like reports stated off the bat that Greg Schiano didn't want Josh Freeman as quarterback last season, and then in the off season they drafted Glennon.
Mike Glennon,
and the guy now who's took Freeman's job, Greg Schiano said, you know, he didn't have a problem with Josh Freeman. He just thought he just wanted him to work for his position. Now you hear that, you know, now there were rumblings, and you said the rumblings about how Greg Schiano didn't want Josh Freeman to be the team captain. He denied that. Now it's Greg Schiano saying that he didn't leak information about Josh Freeman being in the drug abuse program in the NFL. So it's like, dude, like everything that's come out, you look like you're lying. And you look like you conspired in some levels to make sure this guy is not the quarterback for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And one other thing to me that would annoys me is that it's the way this is being done. It's so dirty. Like this guy, everybody knows this guy wants to go. He wants to leave. He's trying to get out of Tampa Bay. But you're trying to tarnish his image. Like that's the thing that annoys me. You're trying to tarnish his image to make you look good, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and things like they were leaking out that he didn't want to take the team picture, that he was late, he didn't show up or was late to team meetings. Then there was a whole discussion on was Josh Freeman told to sit in the luxury box and not be on the sideline because he was inactive for last week's game, or was it a mutual decision? So it's a lot of things that are it's looking really messy, and it's not looking good for Greg Schiano, because just personally what you've heard about from the end of last season to this season is players don't really agree with or like the way he's running things. It's more like a college coach atmosphere. So, you know, once you get the players starting to revolt and you're not getting any wins, it could equal, you know, I told Wally, me personally, I wouldn't be surprised if he's out by the week 14 of the NFL season.
Yeah, he could be out early, definitely, because you know what? He doesn't have clout enough to act that way. Seriously. It's not like he's Tom Coughlin. Tom Coughlin has a couple rings. Bill Parcells, he don't have that clout. Belichick, he doesn't have that clout to act that way. So if you're already losing the locker room, you're pretty much done. You already had Revis complain about you, and I believe it. You know, Revis can come out on Twitter and say we're cool, but when folks come out and say like, all right, you know, when it comes out that Revis or whoever isn't digging your style or your brand of football, then it's a problem. You having Revis play zone when he's a man corner.
To sum it up, when there's smoke, there's fire.
Exactly. All right, during the first quarter of the season, what has shocked you so far?
What has shocked me? I guess this is twofold. The trade that happened a couple of weeks ago with Cleveland trading Trent Richardson for a first-round pick, and then subsequently them starting Brian Hoyer and getting two wins in a row. So that's probably the biggest shock for me.
Yeah, biggest shock for me, honestly, is the Pittsburgh Steelers. Like, and how the Steelers are like 0-4, and like teams like it's like not even just the Steelers, the Steelers and the Falcons. Falcons are 1-3. Teams that you know, you think of the Steelers historically, you see them as a team as a contender. And the teams they've lost to, it's not just them being 0-4, but the teams they lost to. They lost to the Titans at home, the Bears at home, and the Bears aren't a bad team, but to lose to these teams at home, you would think the Steelers would dominate these games, and they didn't. They now fall into 0-4. Even the losing to the Vikings, which with Matt Castle, that kind of it wasn't a Steelers type of team. You know, you would think, all right, the Steelers would stop the run. They load up on Adrian Peterson, and they would stop Adrian Peterson and make Matt Castle beat him, and that didn't happen. So the Steelers really, really have shocked me. And I also, you know, race team, the Atlanta Falcons has shocked the bejesus out of me.
Yeah, I think the Atlanta Falcons, that's more of the, you know, Roddy White being injured. And also, you know, they lost a lot of pieces from that defensive backfield from last year. You know, last year they had Asante Samuel, Dante Robinson, and Brent Grimes. Only Asante Samuel's there. And then they went out and drafted two young Trufant. Mm-hmm. And also they don't have a pass rush. You know, they got rid of John Abraham, so they don't have a pass rusher. So I think a number of things have played into Atlanta's slow start. Ultimately, they can turn things around. I believe they can. Once you get Steven Jackson back, just pounding the ball with him, getting back to the old Falcons way of offense. But like you said, the Steelers, that's a situation that doesn't look like it's going to be able to correct itself for a long time, just simply because they're old and they have a lot of cap problems coming in the next couple of years. So it's going to be interesting times. I believe that Mike Tomlin is an excellent coach. But it's going to be interesting to see. And also, you know, with Todd Haley as the offensive coordinator.
He needs to get fired.
Yeah, they need to get rid of him. They just need to sack him now.
Yeah.
And, you know, start over. So.
Yeah, I agree. And real quick on Atlanta. Atlanta's schedule has been pretty difficult, too, at the same time. Playing some undefeated. Well, the Saints were undefeated. Miami, they were undefeated. And the Patriots, too, as well. So they've had a tough.
Murderer's row to start it out.
A tough schedule. Right now. What would you say is the best division in the NFL?
Best division? I'm going to have to go with, and I know it sounds weird saying this, the AFC East. The Patriots are undefeated. Dolphins only lost one. And then you have the Jets and the Bills both at 2-2. So I have to go with AFC East for right now.
That's not bad, actually.
Yeah.
I wasn't even thinking of that team. I know everybody wants to say the NFC West. That's a popular one. And it is tough. I'm going to go a different route. I'm going to say the AFC South. I like the teams in the AFC South. The Tennessee Titans have really impressed me. They've really surprised me. I think they're a very tough team. Locker going down is going to hurt, obviously. He may be out for 4 to 8 weeks.
Greg Williams at the defensive coordinator.
Yeah, he's doing his job.
Yeah, he
regardless
is.
Of Bounty Gate, the man doing his job. You got the Houston Texans, who is a very strong team. You know, Matt Schaub needs to step up. Obviously, costing the game against Seattle, they would have beat Seattle right now if it wasn't for Matt Schaub's dumb play. I don't need to talk about it. We all have seen it on TV. And then you have the Jacksonville Jaguars. That division is pretty good. And the Colts, which to me probably may be the best. To me, maybe the second best team in the AFC. So I think this division is coming back from the glory days back in the day when they had when they used to go with the, you know, the big wars with the Baltimore Ravens, when, you know, the Titans, Steve McNair and the Ravens. I believe who else was in that division? Because the Colts were always in that division, right? Before they did the realignment, before they changed it up.
Yeah.
Was it? I have to do research, but
yeah.
You know what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah.
Back in the day, it used to be a real tough division. So I think it's coming back.
Okay.
It's coming back.
Good choice.
Let's go to a topic or a theme segment that Will came up with.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So it's the – I know I said it. I'm going to say it wrong again. The first is the three things you found out during week four.
Yeah, three things we learned about week
– Learned. I'm sorry.
Three things we learned about week four.
About
the NFL during week four. All right. You want to go first?
Three things. What I've learned –
You can give one, I'll give one.
All right. What I've learned And, you know, it's going to hurt me, you know, because I'm a Geno Smith fan. When I know Geno Smith, for him to be the quarterback I think he's going to be, he has a lot to learn.
Okay. For me, first thing that I learned from week four is that Matt Flynn is not – there's a reason why Matt Flynn hasn't captured the starting NFL quarterback job. When he went to Seattle and was beaten out by Russell Wilson, and now when he went to Oakland and was beaten out by Terrell Pryor, he's just not a starting NFL caliber quarterback. And we saw – anyone who saw the game or listened to it on the radio, as I did, learn that.
Also, what I've learned is that Bill Belichick and Tom Brady are a dynamic duo. When it looks like they're weak and it looks like you could take them out and it looks like their wins aren't legitimate, they say, boom, we got you. We are still that team. Even with no weapons, we're still that team.
Second thing I learned that, you know, during the preseason, there was a lot of indecisiveness of would Chip Kelly be able to run the same type of offense that he ran at Oregon. As we've learned through the first 4 weeks, and specifically this week, no, he won't be able to run that type of offense at the same pace that he ran it at previously in Oregon, just because simply you don't have the players that you had at Oregon, and the level of competition is stronger in the NFL.
And what I've learned this week is that the Colts, as a team, is really dangerous. As a team, as a whole team, that trade they got with Richardson, the defense they had with Darius Butler from the Patriots, they added Darius Butler last season, obviously, but he's on this team. You got LaRon Landry, who didn't play last week, but he's still on this team. They have playmakers, man. They have playmakers, Mathis. They have playmakers, and they are a dangerous team. They look like they're the second best team in the AFC. They're not being the Broncos, though.
One thing to pick, they also get their first-round draft pick back, this week. I don't even want to pronounce his name up. The linebacker from Florida State. Okay, the last thing that I learned for this for week four is, wow, just went blank just that fast.
Oh, you had it, too.
I just had it. It was on the tip of my tongue. As much as we want to believe that the San Francisco 49ers can win a Super Bowl as a pass first team, they have to go back to that ground and pound how Jim Harbaugh when he was at Stanford and also at San Diego State. They have to be a run first team
Alex Smith type team.
Yeah, type of team that allows Colin Kaepernick to make plays with his arms sporadically down the field.
Oh, Alex Smith type of team.
I'm not gonna say Alex Smith type of team, but you need to pound the ball with Frank Gore, and that litany of running backs that they have.
You think Alex Smith is laughing right now? He's undefeated.
I think he is. I think there's a part of Alex Smith that's saying, you know, Look what I'm able to do if had you given a chance. But also, Colin Kaepernick can also come back and say, well, I did lead this team to a Super Bowl.
You didn't win, though, Alex. You know.
Nah, yeah.
I mean, Alex Smith got to an NFC Championship game. Still, I mean.
True.
And all in all, the same thing. real quick. Another part of Will's dynamic segments. Three things you should know. I'm starting first?
Yeah.
All right, three things. The first thing going through week five. Oh, yeah, I know. For Cowboy fans, Peyton Manning's going to kill you. Oh, my God. Peyton Manning for Cowboy. Like, honestly, for Cowboy fans, Peyton Manning is like Freddy. Do not go to sleep because he's going to be in your dreams, son. In your dreams. Saturday night, do not go to sleep because you are going to see I guarantee 4+ touchdowns by Peyton Manning against the Cowboys defense. If Phillip Rivers can throw one for 400, and I love Phillip, what you think that the bad man named Peyton Manning gonna do to you? Yeah, Stephen A. Smith gonna say Aaron Rodgers. I say Peyton Manning. The bad man Peyton Manning is gonna do. That is the best quarterback in the NFL. What is he going to do to you? He's on a mission. He's getting the MVP because Adrian Peterson got it last season. Cowboy fans, I'm praying for you right now. I'm like, I'm doing a sign of Jesus. It's over. Over already. 2-3.
All right. Okay. That's pretty good. This week we'll find out if New Orleans Saints are for real, because over the next 2 weeks specifically, we'll find out if the New Orleans Saints are for real. This week they have the Chicago Bears coming up, and then next week they travel to New England to play the New England Patriots. So we'll see.
Outside.
Yeah.
Outside.
An outside game. Mm-hmm. In October. You know, it won't be as cold as it would, but it'll be, you know. They'll still be an element. So we'll see if the New Orleans Saints are really for real, like a lot of people think they are.
Well, good one. All right. This is it. We'll see. All right, here's a big game. Interdivision game. Giants versus the Eagles. This is the Giants season right here. Even I don't care how weak the NFC East is. You know, people obviously 0-4 with the division. You see Cowboys losing left and right. And the Giants have played a bunch of the tough teams. But still, this is it. This is the season right here. But I have a bowl. This is what I'll let you know. The Giants season ends week 5. Though the Eagles defense, I mean, Eagles offense hasn't worked against particular teams this upcoming weeks, this offense works week 5 against the Giants. Because some of those guys are already tapped out, in my opinion. So the Giants season ends week 5.
Wow, that's really bold.
I'm bold.
this week we'll find out who is the better young quarterback, Russell Wilson or Andrew Luck, because they face off against each other. That's actually one of the games we're picking. So we'll find out. We'll find out who's the better young quarterback, and I'm going with Andrew Luck. Emerging as the better of the two.
Do you see Russell Wilson's stats against the Texans?
Yeah, I saw
that team. He's a manager, so I'm sorry. I like Russell. I like Russell Russ. He's a manager. Andrew Luck is a winner. Anyway, I'm with you. I'm with you though. Andrew Luck.
Okay.
The last one, right?
Yep.
All right. Let's see. What to choose from? What to choose from, son? What to choose from? All right. Hold on. I gotta think about this. Green Bay's playing. The Packers are playing the Lions. Oh yeah. Okay. This is it. Packers versus Lions.
Mm-hmm.
Detroit. Reggie Bush. This is your chance to take the division right now. You got the talent. It's here. I'm here to say, in Lambeau, Megatron, Reggie Bush. Ray J said he hit it first. Who cares? Reggie Bush. It's time.
You're
NFC
wild.
North. It's here for the taking. It's here for the taking. It's right here. It's here for the taking. All you got to do is dominate a porous Packers defense that has no answer for Megatron. And you have Reggie Bush right now that is doing what Java best did for him a couple years ago. Add that with Megatron. This team and Pettigrew is a tight end. This team is dangerous.
All right, this last one's kind of a cop-out. It's kind of easy. The Oakland Raiders versus San Diego Chargers game has been moved from 4 o'clock to 11:35 Eastern Standard Time. So once, you know, all of you football junkies, you'll get a double dose of late night football because you get the San Francisco 49ers versus the Houston Texans at 8:35 Eastern Standard Time. Then you have San Diego versus Oakland at 11:35. So government workers, you might be able to stay up late and watch both of the games.
Yeah, chance. Yeah, exactly. Or hopefully we have that, you know, hopefully the furlough ends by then. And I'm going to have to Kirk out some more. Again, I hate you, Congress. So that's pretty much, that's all of it? That's all?
Yeah, that's it.
That's all, really?
Yeah,
that's man. All right, let's go to our picks real quick. Picks for the week. Will right now is 7-1.
So I'm guaranteed money if you betting with me. I just want you all to know that.
Will
I'm
right
guaranteed
now,
money.
All I'm saying is Will right now.
I can't lose. Will, I've lost once,
Will
but go ahead.
7-1. I'm 5-3. Okay. Whoop-dee-doo. All right, Will.
All right.
It's your 7-1.
Okay. Me too. Me too.
You. Anyway, it's real thirsty. Let's go off the bat. Let's go. Patriots versus the Bengals.
I'm going to go first. I'm going with the Patriots.
See, Will, that's a safe pick. Patriots just beat Atlanta in Atlanta. Everybody now thinks the Patriots will win, but I see something different.
Okay.
The Bengals will win this game. They're bouncing back from a terrible performance against Cleveland. We thought they were contenders. Now they look like pretenders. I think during week 5, they look like contenders again. This defense is the toughest defense the Patriots have seen. This Bengal defense will come at Tom Brady. By watching Tom Brady for years, he cannot stand a defense that puts constant pressure on him. And you got Geno Atkins, Johnson. It looks like it could be a rough day for Tom Brady and the Patriots. So I got the Bengals taking that game. Seattle versus the Colts in Indy.
You go
first. I'm gonna go with the Colts. I like what the Colts did to San Fran. They beat them up in San Fran in Candlestick. Obviously the Seahawks beat up San Fran in Seattle, but Seattle was a decent team on the road. Not a really good team, not a dominant team on the road. They're a decent team. They're excellent at home. This game is in Indy. I see Andrew Luck taking this game and showing the world that he's 10 times better than Russell Wilson.
I'm going to have to differ with you. I do see Andrew Luck having a good game statistically against the Seahawks, but I ultimately see the Seahawks, them being too physical for the Colts. So I'm going with Seattle.
Cool. I think it's an easy game, but, you know, the records dictate it. And it's Dallas. Dallas is supposed to be America's team. The Broncos versus the Dallas Cowboys. Will, you go first.
Do I really have to go? Please. Broncos. Peyton Manning, though, like you said, Peyton Manning throws four touchdowns.
Easily the Broncos. And I will be I haven't really commented on any Cowboy games, especially the game they lost to the Chargers. But at what Peyton Manning's gonna do to you guys, I have to say something. So believe it. What's gonna happen? It's gonna be something deadly. It's gonna be legendary, mixed in a little bit with something biblical. All right, last game. Texans versus the Niners.
This is not really a tough one. I'm going to go with San Fran. Ultimately, I think that the ghost of last week for Matt Schaub are too much for him to get over. As you saw by J.J. Watt's post-game interview.
What did he say?
He was essentially about to call out Matt Schaub.
What did he say?
They asked him about the game. He was like, damn right, I'm pissed off. It's a tough game. We had him 20-3, and he was about to say the offense let him off the hook. Yeah. So I see some dissension between that team and this thing starting to unravel. So I'm going with San Fran.
Well, you know what? I think it's a week when they all get together. They unify. That's what the Congress can't do. They're going to do what all world leaders can't do. They don't get together. They don't make it work. This defense is too tough and stout. Once this team takes away Frank Gore, San Fran struggles. This Texans defense is too strong. I see the Texans going to Candlestick. Is it still called Candlestick?
Yeah, it's still called Candlestick.
See the Texans going to Candlestick and getting a W. Putting more doubt in the Kaepernick's mind.
Okay.
All right. Well, anyway, it's time for another commercial break. Last segment for the show. We'll be talking college football. Maryland undefeated. Big game this week against Florida State. It's the Urban Sports Scene on the Eyes Radio Network.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Hi, this is Wally Akinso from the Urban Sports Scene. Earlier today, I had a sit-down interview with Jim Gray, which focused on a hard decision that I had to make.
How many people know your decision right now?
In all realness, Jim, that's a dumbass question. I should smack your ass right now.
One hand or two hands?
If you keep playing, I'm going to smack you with two hands.
When did you decide?
The idea of me smacking you came about 30 seconds ago.
You still a nail biter?
Don't worry about my nails. They won't be in the way when I smack you. Don't worry about it, all right?
We've had everybody else biting their nails, so I guess it's time for them to stop chewing.
Jim, if I was you, I wouldn't worry about everybody else.
The answer to the question everybody wants to know, what's your decision?
I smacked Jim Gray.
That was the conclusion you woke up with this morning.
Yes, Jim, that was the decision that had me tossing and turning this morning. It was hard, but I felt that my left and my right would make an impact on your face. And I was right.
Why?
Why? That's why. You think you know? You have no idea. You don't know the decisions that anybody within the USS has to make.
I'm in my zone, I'm feeling it.
Stop blowing my buzz, quit killing it. So buy another round and try to shut us down by the hour ago, but we still in this.
Shout out to Urban Sports Team and Wally and Will. Love y'all, appreciate y'all. Keep up the support. We'll keep, you know, we'll keep the hits coming.
All right, we're back. Like I said, the Urban Sports Scene on the Eyes Radio Network. Thanks for listening, people. We're in college football now. Maryland, Saturday, versus Florida State. Big game for Maryland. They win this game, their chances to maybe crack into a BCS is quite high. Maybe. Who knows? They're 25th, I believe, in the country right now. So they're in the polls now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it may be a little far from they get to the BCS, but who knows? If you beat Florida State, something can happen. But can you see this team competing with Florida State? It's in Tallahassee.
I can see them competing for maybe the first half, and then after the second half, I think Jameis Winston and Florida boys in Florida State blow it wide open.
Jameis Winston. I was messing his name up. Jameis Winston is dangerous. But you got to give my man, like, Diggs credit. Like, Diggs.
They got your boy.
Ron Washington. Is he coming back with Texas? Sorry, watching PTI. Ron Washington is now on TV.
Why do you have to continue to laugh when you see his face, man? That's
like,
that's
a crackhead. I'm sorry. Ron Washington look like a crackhead. I'm sorry, Ron Washington. I feel bad for you. Oh my God!
Go ahead, Wally. Go ahead.
He looks like you gotta take over the show. You should have done that, Will. And I can't stop laughing around watching it. I'm sorry. Like Diggs for Maryland is deadly. He's got that speed. He has speed. He's potent. One of the best players in the country. He can get Florida State problems. But you know, my whole thing. Obviously, I think it'll be a feel good story if Maryland can beat Florida State. Will it happen? I doubt it. Jameis Winston is too real. I watched him again against Boston College, and when they were down, he came back. He's accurate, and he's not a, you know, I didn't really watch him his first game. I watched the first half of his first game, and I automatically you always come up with the stereotype of he's black and he can run. He must be fast. He's not fast. I heard that he ran a 4.9 in an Alabama camp with Saban. He ran 4.9, came back, and he ran like a 4.6, 4.5. So he's not that fast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's mobile, but he's not fast. So he's really a passer. I looked at him, he's really a good passer. So this kid's, and he's putting balls, I mean, right on, like, right in tight spots. So this dude, man.
Balls in tight spots?
I know, that's not good. I ain't want to say that, man. He put the football.
I couldn't let you go off.
I know,
off
he put the football in tight spots.
Thank you.
Dang, that did sound messed up. Yeah, so he's talented. But can Maryland, will Maryland compete? I don't even know if Maryland can compete because the schedule, I mean, their schedule doesn't dictate them being that strong of a team, other than being, I guess, West Virginia, who beat Oklahoma State over the weekend. So we'll see. We'll definitely see. I have faith in Maryland. I think it's a good story if they do it. They beat Florida State and then beat Clemson, too, down the road because they have Clemson. They actually have Clemson here. In College Park, if they beat Clemson, I think we can start talking about Maryland maybe, or deservingly so, should be talks in the national title chase. Will they get it? No, but they should be in the chase or in the discussion.
They'll definitely be in the BCS game if they beat both of them and then went
division.
Out.
They win the ACC division. Yeah, they win the ACC conference, so they'll definitely get in. Pose the question, if Maryland can compete, period, with Florida State on our Facebook page, and it's not on here. But anyway, yeah, so I'll find it later. But yeah, a lot of folks thought Maryland could compete, but they would get blown out at the same time. That's a lot of people. No one thinks Maryland can really win, so it is what it is.
But, it is what it is.
Good up for you, Maryland. But real quick.
I'll definitely be watching the game.
You'll be watching the game?
Yeah.
What is it? Is it on ESPN?
I believe so.
Yeah, okay. Well, if Maryland does beat a Florida State, do you think they're in the BCS talk? Or should some folks take Maryland serious if they beat Florida State?
You definitely have to take them serious. And you definitely have to – there'll be a great buildup, more anticipation for that Maryland and Clemson game.
Gotcha. All right, I found it. My man Tom Carroll said he thinks they can compete. But he thinks they can compete better with he thinks they're better than Clemson. No, he thinks Clemson is better than FSU. What's up, Tom? Yeah, I actually think FSU is better than Clemson. I think to me, Winston is just too he's more dynamic than Tosh Bolt. I think so.
No.
He's just more dynamic. He's just more of an accurate quarterback to me. Now, the kid Watkins, I think that's the wide receiver.
Sammy Watkins.
Watkins a beast, though. Watkins is a beast.
He's very explosive.
Yeah, he a beast. So anyway, let's go down to some other news in college football. Lane Kiffin was fired from Florida State. I mean, from USC.
You're laughing about that.
Because you heard how he got fired?
I did. I wanted to go into that story.
It's so dirty.
I don't think it's never
can't be true.
Well, for those of you who hadn't heard, after I get what was it, 62-41?
The beatdown?
Yeah, beatdown against Arizona State.
Yeah.
A couple hours later, USC flew back to California. They got back to California around 3:45 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
The AD Pat Hayden met Lane Kiffin and the rest of USC at the airport on their chartered plane.
Yeah.
He says, "Hey, I want to talk to you for a second." Lane Kiffin says, "Hold the bus." Pat Hayden says, "No, don't hold the bus. Go ahead, leave." Lane Kiffin's kind of shocked, like, huh?
Yeah.
Then they had continued to have a talk for about 30, 45 minutes, and he lets him go.
And
that's got to be harsh to come wake 3:45 in the morning. You know he was asleep on that plane. And for you to wake up and just be like, all right.
That's how you get home.
I don't know. Maybe Pat Hayden gave him a ride home or threw him like $25, said, here goes some cab money.
Damn, that is what a way to go, man.
That's tough. For somebody to say, hey, hold the bus.
Don't hold the bus.
You're lucky we got you a plane ride home.
You gotta find your ass home.
That's a tough one, man. That is tough. 3:45 in the morning to be fired.
Dang, that's brutal, man. That's mean, man.
That's brutal, yeah.
You know how you had to piss that man off?
Yeah, that means.
Fire you and not get you a ride home?
Yeah. That's gonna totally blow your Sunday.
It's your Sunday. Dang.
But at least you know he signed the contract, and so he'll get paid for the rest of his contract.
Yeah, so at least that much.
Yeah, at minimum he'll get that, but that's a tough way to go out,
oh
man. 3:45 in the morning, right off of a plane.
That is terrible. He might be on some crack like Ron Washington, all that type of stuff. Seriously.
You're a wild dude, man.
Seriously. Anyway, who should be the next coach for USC? My brother is so happy. Real quick, my brother King Al, who's a guest on this show at times. It's a big fan of Lane Kiffin being fired. So anyway,
If you look, one more thing on Lane Kiffin, this guy has lucked up into some of the best jobs.
Oakland,
Tennessee, then USC. Yeah, and he's only, what, 35 years old?
Some good jobs.
Yeah, I wonder what he's going to do next.
This is another topic. See, this is another topic for another day. See, this is the problem with the society. Can an African-American dude get this type of opportunity? A guy who's bombed in every place?
The evidence shows no. It hasn't happened so far. But back to your original question. I actually think that a guy who would be an ideal for USC would probably be Greg Roman. And people might not know who Greg Roman is. He's the offensive coordinator for the San Francisco 49ers. And prior to that, he was an offensive assistant at Stanford. So he knows the Pac-10 or 12, whatever it's called. He knows he's able to recruit the California area, which is a hotbed for college football. And he will restore a type of football to USC that, when they were successful in making their championship runs, worked best for them, which was running the ball. So I think Greg Roman for one. For two, the guy, Kevin Sumlin at Texas A&M, I think that would be an interesting pick because obviously we've shown he's able to open things up and create a dynamic offense, which would be appealing to a lot of the athletes to go to USC.
I like those two picks. Kevin Sumlin, I like that one. That's real good. But a guy from Louisville, too. Strong.
Charles Strong?
Yeah. You don't like his fit?
No, I think it
would. You don't like his fit. Oh, sorry.
But no, my only question is, can he recruit California?
That's true. Well, everybody, you know, wants Jack Del Rio to be the coach. He was under Pete Carroll's staff, good defensive coordinator. Actually was a decent coach in the NFL until he bombed anyway. He had a good little semi running with Jacksonville. So that's a good one. USC, you're a private university.
Yeah, you could pay whatever you want to pay for a coach in their system.
Exactly. You can get any. You should try to go after a big coach, a coach that you know many want. Why not try to go after Jeff Fisher?
I don't think he'll come back.
Hey, why not? He's from USC.
He's from you. I think he'll be one of the guys that they consult about coaches. But I don't think. Yeah, but
gotta go after. Why not? You gotta go after something big. You're gonna do it big. You're USC. Why not go after a guy who one of the architects of a good USC offense with Pete Carroll. Thank you, Pete Carroll. Norm Chow. Why not try to get Norm Chow out of Hawaii? Why not interview him?
That could potentially work.
Yeah. So I mean, there are individuals out there. I feel like USC.
Or you could just go balls to the wall and go for John Gruden.
Yeah, that's a good one too. Seriously.
He wants to go back into coaching. He has that dynamic personality that you want.
He loves to teach, and you don't. And teaching is good in college. In the NFL, professor is kind of different. But teaching itself is really good. It works really good in college. So yeah, these are individuals I think USC should try to tap into. But let's go down another segment. I mean, not a segment. Another topic that for discussion. The SEC. I saw over the weekend. I saw some good college football in the SEC. I saw. The Georgia LSU game.
Mm-hmm.
That was a great game. Great game.
Great back and forth.
And then you know, if you go off of that, you saw Georgia beat. Who did Georgia beat before LSU? Because they lost their first. Georgia lost to Clemson. I'm sorry, lost to Clemson. So and Clemson was a good team. So when you watch Georgia, some of the teams they've beaten to get to this point, you know, everybody was saying how Murray hasn't won the big game, and now he's won two big games already.
They beat South Carolina,
and now they beat a good LSU team, a really good LSU team. This division, right, and even Texas A&M. I didn't even mention Texas A&M, which is a strong team. The only team that's undefeated right now, I believe, is Bama. Is Bama the only undefeated team in the conference?
Yes.
This division is crazy. Could probably be anybody in the country on any given day in any venue. Will we see two teams in the SEC in the national title game?
No.
They
won't make that mistake again. For the simple fact that you'll probably have Ohio State run the board.
They're losing to Michigan.
Well, there's a high probability you have Ohio State running the board.
They're losing to Michigan.
And then
you better believe in that.
Oregon, you know, with
that's
that
ma- that's
Morgan, you know, they play, even though, you know, they play Stanford, who's top five nationally ranked team.
Stanford, that's a good one. Yeah. Barry Sanderson, I saw him run.
Yeah.
I saw him in high school, and now I saw him in college.
Yeah, phenomenal.
Phenomenal, yeah.
So, no, I don't think you'll see two SEC teams in the national championship game. And then you also have, you know, if Clemson continues to win out, they're ranked number three. So
and they have Georgia on it. Was it Georgia? They beat Georgia, right?
Yeah, they beat Georgia. Yeah.
So they have Georgia on their resume.
And then they also are going to play South Carolina at the end of the season.
And then they play Florida State.
Yep. So.
And if they win out, yes, and that's impressive in its own right. All right, well, you know, that's true. But I'm a bold dude. I feel like you may have an SEC team in a national. I mean, two teams. You could. I just think the best football is the SEC. And I hate the SEC, to be honest with you. I just think there's the football is too good. You can see it. When they play outside their brand, they win. Now, Florida State is a team that intrigues me. Clemson obviously has already impacted that by beating Georgia, though it was in Clemson. So that in its own right makes it a little, you know, for me. I always judge a team when you can go in somebody's home and beat you. I think that you show your greatness. Like Alabama going to Texas A&M and beating Texas A&M. It was College Station, that's what they call it. Mm-hmm. And College Station, that's more impressive because they're going into enemy territory and still picking up a W. So I always feel that's more impressive. So, but we'll see. You have mentioned some good teams. You mentioned Clemson, Florida State.
Well, that's my job.
And some other garbage teams. So, But yeah, all in all, I think so. It's a big possibility. I was just so amazed by the LSU Georgia game, just the back and forth, and the passion that was involved in that game. It reminded me of an NFL game, to be totally honest with you, a competitive NFL game. Not the Jacksonville Jaguars. So that's pretty much it, man.
All right, man. Another week. We want to thank you all for listening to us again. You know, we appreciate everything, you know, you guys are spending your time, taking time out of your day, listen to our podcast. We put a lot of hard work into this.
Yeah, Mayweather, you know what I'm saying? That's what we do. We do Mayweather work, baby.
Yeah, once again, you all, be safe till the next time we talk to you, and we'll see you.
Yes, we will see you. And make sure you listen to us on ESPN 1580. We're going to be on the Coach Les and RJP3 show. So make sure you tune in. It's the Urban Sports Team, the Eyes Radio Network.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces. Sayonara, bitches.